I am Max Porterfield, President and CEO of Callinex Mines, where we're expanding some very high-grade copper gold-rich VMS discoveries just outside of Flin Flon, Manitoba, where we've got a 100-year production history and rich infrastructure in the workforce that's in need of new discoveries there, which we're very excited about.
Max, good to see you again. It's always a pleasure speaking to you. There's so much we could talk about, including what the Canadian government is doing with its capital gains tax. We could talk about the retail market. We could talk about all of that, metal prices. But we've both got meetings coming up soon. So let's get to the nub of it, which is your news release that you put out about some geophysical results. I confess, when I read it, I was rather glad that I was going to have this conversation so that you could explain it to me. So perhaps before we kind of get into any images or any screenshots or sections, can you just kind of describe it to me what the news is about here?
Yeah, so one of the key parts of vectoring for these VMS deposits, particularly at Pine Bay, is geophysics. Geophysics has been a critical tool set through really most of the modern discoveries in the Flin Flon Greenstone belts. You know, this is an area that's yielded 32 mines over the past century, and electromagnetics was really was kind of the working model for defining these deposits. Of course, the geology is important to that, and geochemistry as well. In electromagnetics, you can use surface EM. You can use borehole electromagnetics as well as airborne. But again, when you look for one thing one way, you're going to find one thing one way. And so really what's led to a lot of our success, certainly over the past several years, with starting with the discovery of Rainbow, is we brought in different geophysical tool sets to aid with the geology, geochemistry, and the existing geophysical tool sets in electromagnetics and borehole EM and what have you. And we were very successful with using IP. Induced polarization, which looks for different rock property tests, for different rock properties than you have with just electromagnetics, which looks for conductivity. It looks for resistivity and chargeability properties. And so because the deposits at Pine Bay are near vertical and they're very steeply dipping and they're not super wide VMS lenses and typically are super wide, your footprint for a geophysical anomaly is quite small. And so what we've used in terms of IP was to broaden that anomaly and map a larger portion of the volcanic system. And so what we've done here is we've, again, it's kind of a evolution of our exploration approach, is we brought on magnetotelerics, which also, like IP, looks for resistivity. And we're looking for resistivity lows. And what we're looking to do, again, is to map the alteration halo around a massive sulfide deposit, because they come together most frequently. So again, that's kind of what the model is.
Can I just jump in there? When you say that the alteration halo is a resistivity low, can you just explain why that is? Because there's part of my brain would think an alteration halo might be kind of more siliceous, and that might be a kind of a resistivity high. But just to reiterate, you're talking about the alteration halo is a resistivity low.
Yeah, because of the disseminated pyrite mineralization that you'll be intersecting throughout that. So there'll be a resistivity low and a chargeability high. They're really the inverse of each other. And then the very, very, very lowly resistant will be your massive sulfides, but you're not going to see that really in the data. You're okay. Going to look on the edges of your resistivity low. Because your resistivity low on the edges of the alteration, you'll come into the mineralized horizon, which is the period of time where the volcanic event was displacing these sulfides that are base metal and precious metals bearing. And that's kind of the approach. So you're broadening your target area, drilling into that target area, and then you're using the more traditional vectoring tools in borehole electromagnetics, in geochemistry, of course, aiding that pattern, and in good old-fashioned geology, as you vector towards that high grade. And that's the kind of the mindset as you look for these, much smaller deposits that have a much smaller footprint.
Okay, so just if I can read that back to you, as I understand it, you do the geophysics, you cast a wide net, you do a survey that can pick up the alteration and the massive sulfides, because the alteration halo is much bigger than the actual footprint of the, or the signature of the massive sulfides. Therefore, once you can identify the alteration, you would then drill into that and then do downhole surveys to kind of get a further vectoring towards the massive sulfides once you've drilled into the alteration package. Is that about
right? That's correct, yes.
Okay,
and you know, in the case of Pine Bay, when we show you the plan view later, there's a very, very large alteration halo that's been mapped at surface, so you can see how excited exploration companies can get when they see alteration mapped at surface so extensive. And but you know, that's very limiting, though. You know, in the data that we receive from our descendant line, it's actually mapping a new, you know, a very sizable alteration package in the middle of the lake. So again, it allows you to see where you can't see, not only just above surface, but also when you can't even map at surface. And then we're looking for that data to correlate with our vast existing data sets, right? And that's the kind of the privilege of being in an area that's been explored and that we spent a lot of time on, is we come in with existing data sets. And then as you add on another layer of data, it can be very, very valuable to kind of aid in taking that final, you know, mile, so to speak, and making that discovery.
You mentioned the alteration footprint of Pine Bay. I thought the really big alteration package was at Cabin, which kind of links to Descendant. You got 700 meters or something of the Millrock formation. Is that right?
In terms of the Millrocks, the base, the growth fault corridor, but in terms of these alteration packages, they're going to come and go, and they're correlated with the deposits. So you're going to come into an alteration package when you come into Pine Bay, but typically there's a size of your alteration package correlated to the size of your alteration halo. You know, there's another alteration halo around Rainbow that's significant, but when you look at the size of the alteration halo at Descendant compared to Rainbow, it's 10 times the size, which is why there's always been so much exploration around Descendant on the property. And now, as we've done this MT survey over the Descendant discovery to help map that, we're seeing a large alteration package supported by the existing drill data that we have nearby to the north of Pine Bay, in, you know, further to the west of Descendant.
Let's bring it up. I'm getting I think a section would help me. But I always thought that there was a big surface alteration system that could be mapped around Cabin.
There is, and so what we're saying is that we're mapping that and more with our most recent survey data. So at surface, the alteration package that's been mapped spans 700 by 1100 meters right here.
Okay,
so that's a huge alteration package. And so when we did this MT survey, this is the MT survey we're going to show. That's what we've announced.
Yeah,
and so you're cutting across these mineralized horizons that host these different various deposits. And so the mineralized horizons, as I mentioned, they're vertical, so they're cutting across something like this. For example, the Cabin horizon would be something like that.
Okay, and that's why the drilling is mostly perpendicular to that. I can see the drill hole traces.
Right, exactly. So you're drilling perpendicular to that. So in theory, this horizon would continue, and this would be where the Pine Bay horizon could be.
Yep.
And then ultimately the Rainbow horizon would be something like that, because Rainbow is down there.
Yep.
Right. And of course, geology moves, but this is very similar. So that's why we did the MT survey line over Descendant, to see over Descendant, because it was perpendicular to that horizon, and all that alteration should be mapping there. And now when we do this, look at this cross section, we'll be mapping what we're seeing as a big resistivity low anomaly that sits between what we interpreted as the Pine Bay and the Rainbow horizons.
Right.
Which hosts Rainbow to the south and then Pine Bay to the south of this line. So again, that's kind of give you the lay of the land. We're going to be pointing towards the alteration halo around here, and then also seeing one that's emerging over here, because it's tight folding that connects all these horizons.
And you can't see it because it's under the lake.
You wouldn't be able to map it if it was at surface. Of course, you wouldn't be able to map it because it'd be under the lake. But the resistivity low is certainly showing up, and it presents itself as it would be at surface, if you could see presumably at surface. But it's really picking up around the 350-meter level below surface, which we'll show on the following image.
And by the description of tight folding, is that am I right in thinking that this is effectively the same paleo surface. It's the same basic stratigraphic horizon, which is representing in three different vertical planes, simply as a function of the folding, which is cut off by erosion at the top and by depth at the bottom.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And we can, that might be a good segue to the survey data image.
Well, let's bring it on. Let's bring it on.
So this is the survey data image, and let me delete that there. But essentially, you have these horizons, and so again, this is the cabin deposit that you saw near surface.
Yep.
And at depth is descendant. So
where's the alteration at cabin? The 700 by 1100 meters.
That would be mapped at surface over here.
Okay, gotcha.
And then at depth, you can see the alteration kind of die off a bit in terms of the resistivity low data.
Yeah.
And these colors are the resistivity low, and that's what we're looking to map here. And then right here is where you're starting to see descendants show up around 800 meters.
Yeah.
And then they really start picking up in terms of the width of that mineralization in the most recent discovery hole 111, and then 112 wedge 1 right here.
Yeah.
And so we're getting that alteration leading into that horizon or that period of time, and then that's where you're getting that massive sulfides that are base metal bearing, which
and
represent
so,
descendant.
So exploration targets around descendant are going to focus a little bit more down at depth, but kind of basically on the edge of that resistivity low.
Yes, because the resistivity low is, again, mapping the alteration package.
Yep. Yep.
Leading in to the descendant deposit.
Gotcha.
Right? And so you would continue stepping out and using geochemistry as well as borehole EM, which you can see right here. This is a borehole electromagnetic conductor that we have from holes around descendant. So again, you can see how the borehole EM data is matching and mirroring the mineralization we're getting in the drill holes, and then correlates nicely to the resistivity low isofel that we're seeing in the MT data here.
Okay, good. And so if that black bar is a borehole EM conductor, I can see a few other bars and some on the left-hand side of the image, and I can also see some pretty spectacular resistivity lows.
Yes, and so these two horizons at depth are merging because of that folding.
Okay.
So you, at some point at depth, you'll see a fold, which you can see in this kind of little cartoon I had drawn on this image earlier.
Yep.
But again, you're looking at a folding and coming up close to the surface, and then that being the Pine Bay horizon, because named off of the Pine Bay deposit that sits on the same area to the south.
Okay.
And what you're seeing in this big resistivity low isoshell is mapping a hidden, because of the lake over it, a hidden alteration system, which would then, on the opposite side of that, be the rainbow horizon that hosts rainbow along this horizon and time period to the south.
Gotcha.
And so you'd want to test resistivity isoshells on the edges of them, where, again, this is an area that hasn't had any drill testing. The only drill hole that crossed this plane for this resistivity low was when we deepened hole 24, and we did hit, you can see the mineralization associated with the Pine Bay horizon, and then we came out and hit the rainbow horizon at depth. But again, keep in mind, this hole was drilled about 185 to 200 meters, given where you are along this trace, away from this MT survey data line. But what you see in that is alteration between those two horizons, which is the geology you want to see, and it matches the model. So it's very, very promising to that end, and we're excited about that.
So from what I can see from here, it looks as if you've got three immediate kind of drill target priorities. Can you, maybe there are more, but could you just kind of, with your cursor, wave at where you think your drill target priorities are?
Well, certainly we're going to prioritize following up on descendant and stepping out. And again, the vector from the geology, the geochemistry, borehole EM, as well as MT, is also signifying continuing to step out at depth. And we believe that higher grades are to come at depth on that discovery.
Yep.
And then, of course, you'd want to come back and test along the edges of these MT isoshells, the resistivity low.
Yep.
And, test it closer to surface and to start again, it's wide open to that end, and then use borehole EM to vector you. Again, you'd want to test this borehole plates here, and hopefully you run into the massive sulfides right out of the gate. But again, if you don't, that's part of the vectoring process, because you can be away, 10, 20 meters from something and not hit the high grade. You'll hit just remnants of something. So again, you'd want to drill test into this edges of these empty ISO shells. And of course, 100% certain the focal point at first would be to start with a step out on descending here at depth.
Great. Thank you. You've neatly outlined the various areas that you're interested in. One is kind of continued at depth below descendant. And equally, you've got these two new areas under the lake on the Pine Bay and the Rainbow Horizons. What does the work plan look like for the rest of the year now that you've got the results of this survey back?
Well, we're still awaiting the results and processing the results for the MT data on the two of the lines to the south, which will also be part of our 2024 exploration. But I would expect that you're going to see a program for 2024 to be limited in size and scope, and provide big upside with step out on descendant to get into that high grade that we believe could potentially come at depth, and testing that theory that's now being supported by the MT data with all the other data sets. And then also follow up and test other targets like the two that we've also seen in the much larger, lowly resisted target to the west of descendant here in the middle of the lake, as well as anything that's been identified from targeting to the south. And any of these targets aren't going to be merely just, MT survey related. There's other data that supports these different target areas that we want to be, real specific in testing out.
And I've got a bunch of questions that follow on from that. But first of all, how long is it going to take for the other two lines to be processed? And, when can we expect, is that a matter of weeks or days into May?
Days to weeks, yeah. Weeks to days, one of the two. Getting the data, it takes time to go through each one of them and get the data and then pull it in with everything else. So that is a timely process, but that's going to be coming in the very near term.
And then I presume that you'll need time to rank your drilling targets and your priorities. So possibly sometime in May or June, you might come up with a revised kind of drill plan.
Yeah, I think that, May is more likely certainly than June. But a firmed up drilling plan outside of, what holes are going to be drilled outside of, stepping on descendant and where. And, we've got a deep targeting pipeline. The priority is certainly descendant, but when you bring in and start seeing these type of results coming out and how significant these resistivity lows and that alteration package is in areas that haven't been appreciated as much, that certainly opens the door for some closer-to-surface discoveries to be made.
And can you drill underneath the lake in the summer, or do you have to wait for a winter drill program?
No, you can drill from the shoreline and hit those targets from the lake. There actually, a lot of these deposits sit along those lake shorelines in Manitoba. And uniquely enough, these targets, the rainbow targets, for example, on the resistivity low on the Rainbow Horizon are up against that northern shoreline just where rainbow sits to the south.
Yeah.
There's actually now, if you look at Lake Athapap, which is where rainbow sits, rainbow is actually the third or fourth deposit, actually fourth deposit to be discovered on that shoreline. You have the rainbow deposit, of course, along that shoreline. You've got Cabin deposit on the other eastern limb of that eastern edge of the Lake Athapap shoreline. And then to the south, you've got the Sourdough deposit that sits on the Lake Athapap shoreline about 3 kilometers. And a couple of kilometers to the south of that, you also have the past producing Centennial mine. So shorelines are good for us. And even outside of the immediate area, the Trout Lake mine sat along the edges of the shoreline. The original Flin Flon ore body was similar. They actually drained the lake in that instance. But that's how these they kind of sit here out in northern Manitoba.
Great, exciting. Remind me where you are on treasury.
We got roughly about a 6-month burn. We took down some options and got a grant since I think we last probably spoke. Again, just waiting the results from the MT results and planning the 2024 campaign.
Yeah, it's nice. I like the look of having some exciting near surface targets. It's always pleasing to have targets which are sitting in the top kind of 500-600 meters.
They're provided to be ramp accessible. Rainbow was the first near surface discovery within 30 kilometers of Flin Flon in over 3 decades, and again, you have to look in a different way where you're kind of overlooking these deposits because of how they sit underground. They don't have as a big of a targeting footprint from the traditional tool set, so we're quite pleased with bringing these other tools in to this type of area to aid for exploration results and kind of show potential where you couldn't see them before based upon the tools that you had at hand.
Max, thank you. Before we go, we've got a couple of minutes. The change in the copper price, the change in the zinc price, tin, gold, has that changed the amount of conversations you've had with institutions and with retail, or is it just has it just changed the tone rather than the quantity?
I mean, I think that the people are much more optimistic. I think that it's been a tough market overall. And now you've got the move in the underlying commodities, and we've yet to see that in the equities as much. I think that's probably the biggest talking point, is that you've seen the metals move, you know, where the equity's at. But, you know, the equities will follow suit. And I think that once these prices stabilize and there's more, you know, confidence that they're longer term, you know, I think you will have money flows back into the sector more substantially than we've seen over the past, you know, 8 to 12 months.
Do you think it's going to take time for the new capital gains law to have to be able to understand the impact of that on the Canadian market?
Well, I mean, I think it can happen instantly. When it does happen, it just depends on how big the money flow is and how dramatic it is. So mining, like many sectors, can turn on a dime for the good and the bad. And I think there's really early indications that things are turning for the very good in the very near future. And so it's just position yourself, you know, with news flow to take advantage of that in the future and build value that obviously correlates.
Good. Well, thank you. I feel as if I understand the modeling and the targeting and the vectoring process that you do in your geophysics much better now. And I'll keep my eyes peeled for the next set of geophysical results to come out.
Excellent. I appreciate the time, and thanks again for having me.